Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Children's Encyclopedia of the Earth by Michael Albee, a 2006 sort of generic book lying somewhere between a coffee table book and a classic geography book, containing for its time fairly up-to-date information, but we sort of in the space of just 10 or 12 years since it was written, we know a lot more different things. We're doing chapter 7, the weather. It's showing a cyclone, a lightning, wind farms, a rainbow. I love rainbows. And the world weather. It is likely wherever you live that one of the first things you do each day is check the weather. Weather affects our lives in many ways, from the what we wear, to how we feel, to what we grow in our gardens. But what makes the weather? Weather is simply air that moves over the Earth's surface. Images from satellites in space show how the air swirls over land masses, bringing wind, cloud, rain, and snow, storms. Generally, people in particular regions experience similar weather from year to year. A regular pattern of weather over an extended period of time is called a region's climate. I like those things. People write those things down, don't they? Hurricanes are huge storms. This picture clearly shows a hurricane, Franz, counterclockwise spiral. In Florida, in 1996, winds do not blow over obstacles, but try to find ways around them. And this creates complex patterns of swirling entities seen above from clouds of the sky. Cold air moving across Antarctica and the Southern Ocean causes large areas of the ice and snow to form over parts of the Weddell Sea. Whatever these pictures are. Climate zones. Different regions of the world have different climate patterns, and smaller areas within those regions also have their own kinds of climate. We call these regions and areas climate zones. Near the equator are tropical zones. They have hot and wet climates. At other points, other extreme north and south poles are extremely cold and dry. In between the warm subtropical zone, dry deserts, arid zones, where the days are hot and the nights are cold, high mountain zones with cold, snowy winters, and temperate zones where conditions are generally moderate all year round. Adaptations of climate. They show plants and animals are found in most places on Earth, even in locations where the weather patterns are extremes. Over time, living things have developed ways of dealing with or adapting to the climate in which they live. Plants, cactus plants, grow in some desert regions. They have few leaves and extensive root systems which store the little water they get to fleshy green leaves. Animals, snow-hoe hares, short ears help retain heat in the snowy environment. Long ears allow the desert-dwelling antelope, jackrabbit, to lose excess heat in hot weather. And you've got different zones. And the coldest place is minus 90 degrees Celsius at Vostok, Antarctica in 1983. Greatest change in a day was from minus 50 to plus 6.7 in the USA. The most day in 1 year was Mount Rainier in America. The hottest place on Earth is 37 degrees in Libya. 57 degrees in Libya. They've quoted that one several times. Weather engine. The sun fuels our weather. The Earth's surface is warmed by sunlight. The tropics, and the ozone layer, we should say that. The tropics on either side of the equator receive the most intense heat, while the poles receive the least. The Earth's surface absorbs half the available energy from the sun. The atmosphere absorbs the rest, or reflects it back in space. Bright white snow, which reflects most of the sun's energy, retains very little heat. Dark green tropical forests absorb much more. Temperatures on land vary more than those in oceans. The differences generate winds. Winds set in motion the vast circulation of the atmosphere, which produces the world's weather. Because the Earth's tilt axis is at 23.5 degrees, the amount of solar energy that reaches different parts of the globe varies the planets of the solar sun, the planet's orbit of the sun. It's also that we actually move with an elliptical orbit, and so we're going faster towards the sun and closer to the sun in our Australian summer. Now, they have, again, different areas of the atmosphere. Again, this is a little bit repeated. They have the thermosphere. It's the atmosphere, outer gases. The air is very thin in the thermosphere, above 80 kilometers. From 50 to 80, we have the mesosphere. So, you have the actual... and there's mesopause or thermopause, so the temperature is dropping as less heat's going in, more's absorbed. Stratosphere, the temperature increases. Stratosphere has dry, warm air. Well, it's cold compared to us, but it's relatively warm air. The troposphere is where there's weather. 0 to 15 kilometres. Here it contains lots of water vapor, dust. Most of the world's weather occurs here. Well, that's what it means. Heat from the sun. Air is warm from the equator, more at the equator than the poles. Depending on the season, rays of light fall on small circular areas near the equator. What does that mean? At the poles, however, the rays of the Earth are angled and spread over wider areas. I think the way they're saying the actual... If you look at it... Earth's climate, the equator, the sun rays almost directly hit the Earth directly, almost year long. This is the hot zone of Earth. Further away from the equator, the rays hit at an angle, and the climate is cooler. Well, this is not too good. The world's wind. Sun heats the tropics year round, and this causes the air at the equator to rise. Well, it's also the water vapor that causes it to rise. It then spreads out, cools, and sinks. And the air flows back towards the equator ground level. This completes a circular pattern of airflow called a cell. Similarly exists between 30 and 60 degrees, between 60 and the poles. So there's three cells. Earth's major movement of air at ground level within these cells creates Earth's major wind patterns. As the wind moves north and south, they are deflected by the planet's rotation to the right in the north hemisphere, to the left in the southern hemisphere. This is known as the Coriolis effect. It's not diverted, it's just that we move with respect to them. Wind cells nearest the equator are called the Hadley cells, after the English scientist George Hadley, who described them in 1753. Fennell cells are named after the American scientist William Fennell, who first noted them in 1856. Wind patterns. Because the air rises and cold air sinks, the sun's uneven heating of the Earth's surface causes the Earth to circulate as shown in the diagram. A rather beautiful diagram here. It is a beautiful, beautiful diagram. Trade winds, easterly winds blow towards the equator. Doldrums, the windless air at the equator. You can see this Coriolis effect. Let's see how they explain it. The northern hemisphere, the Coriolis effect causes the clockwise and down around the high pressure, the counterclockwise and up around the low pressure, the opposite in the southern hemisphere. The global pattern of flow influences local winds such as the monsoon. The seasonal wind brings heavy rains to many subtropical parts of the world. People who live in India and Bangladesh have to cope with their heavy monsoon rains. Dry season. In winter, high pressure creates winds that push moist air away from India and Bangladesh. Wet season. Summer and inland pressure draws moist air from the ocean and brings it towards a torrent of rain. The water cycle. Water moves between the atmosphere, land and sea, creates a cycle of moisture that shapes the weather, provides us with a continuous supply of fresh water. When the sun heats the ocean, lakes and rivers, some of the water turns to water vapor, or liquid water, which releases it into the atmosphere. The water contained in plants is released as part of photosynthesis. That's actually incorrect, because photosynthesis uses water and carbon dioxide. Transpiration, I think they were talking about. So that's really bad. Water contained, okay. The release of water from all these sources is known as evaporation or transpiration for plants. This water vapor forms clouds, which turn produces rain. Some of the rain is absorbed by the soil on plants, while the rest flows back into the seas and rivers and underground channels. From the sea and back again, water evaporates from oceans and other sources against clouds. Wind carries the clouds inland. Rain then falls on the land, and water makes its way back to the sea. This completes the cycle. Rain falls from clouds. Water drains into lakes and rivers and underground channels and flows back. Dark blue areas of the satellite show parts of the world that have the greatest concentration of water vapor in the atmosphere. These areas is where the rain most falls. Clouds. Clouds are masses of water droplets and ice crystals that float in the sky. They are formed, the process begins when warm, moist air rises. As the warm air cools, they are able to hold the water vapor. Some of the water vapor condenses around dust particles and forms miniature water droplets. Each tiny droplet makes up clouds. The sky can be covered with a blanket of clouds that is formed when a mass of warm air rises above the cool airs and causes the water vapor to condense. Clouds also form when the warm air is forced to rise over mountains, or when the warm air blows over cold surface such as cool water. On hot days, storm clouds appear as warm, moist air rises and then cools rapidly. Water droplets in clouds scatter the colours in the white sunlight equally, so the clouds appear white, except when there is a shadow blocking the light. What I was going to say is, what an opportunity to talk about my scattering. What an opportunity. The cumulus clouds will soon bring a storm rain over Poopo in Bolivia. I don't know why they had shown that to us. Casual usually forms as a result of warm air that rises from the ground when the warm air meets the colder air in the higher atmosphere, the water vapor in the rising air condenses over the cloud. Now, I think it is the major thing is that hot air has no capacity to hold water. I will have to go into this. I just have to really, really concentrate. It's the capacity of air, hot air, to hold water. I have to concentrate on that. Convection, heating from the ground warms the air. Convection, heating from the ground warms the air near the surface, causing the air to rise over the mountains. If the air meets the mountain range, it will be forced upwards. The clouds will form over the mountain, and there will be a rain shadow. Front activity, when two air masses meet, the warmer air rises to form clouds. I really do think this will be the water carrying the sky clouds. Now, what is it? There are four zones of the cloud, low-level cloud, medium-level clouds, high-level clouds, and clouds which stretch between all of them. Clouds are named according to their height, shape, and by combining prefixes of alto, cirro, the Latin names of stratus, cirrus wispy, and cumulus. Rain-bearing clouds are called nimbus, and depending on the shape, are known as nimbostratus or cumulonimbus. Puffy or flat. Back and relearn all that. As I read that recently, it's gone from my head. Oh, it's here. Let's see. We actually have high-level clouds, middle-level clouds, and low-level clouds. Cumulus, nimbostratus. So cumulus is puffy, stratus is long, and cirro is high, and alto is medium level. So if they've got an alto, they're medium level. If they're zero, they're very high. You've got nothing there. So you can have cirrostratus is very high, altostratus, and stratus. Or we can have a combination of nimbostratus. I think nimbo means it's got a range. And cumulonimbus. I wonder what nimbus... Oh, yeah, cumulonimbus is puffy rain cloud. And nimbostratus is flat rain cloud. Note the clouds are exactly the same. They are usually grouped according to how high above the ground they are. Although they vary in shape and size, they can be divided broadly into two kinds, heaped, fluffy clouds, or layer clouds. Heaped clouds are formed when pockets of warm air drift upwards, while the layer of fluffy clouds are created as moist air moving horizontally between cool layers. It's important to identify kinds of clouds because they give us information about the weather. White puffy cumulus clouds associated with warm sunny days. Cirrus clouds may be followed by lower altostratus clouds and low stratus rain clouds, which cover the entire cloud sky in solid grey. So we've got cirrus, stop whispering on. Superb cirrus ones, really up. Large cirrus clouds form when the upper level winds are weak and the clouds are not dispersed. Cirrocumulus, which means higher up, they're puffy. Cirrocumulus clouds consist of ice crystals and clouds and have a cellular appearance. Actually, well, I can almost see some mice scattering. Middle clouds, low clouds. So, is it high clouds, middle clouds, low clouds? Altocumulus, form when there's a lot of moisture, but only light winds are blowing. Altostratus, near the polar regions, the thick layers can cover low of the sky. Can I say that's a bit like when you're in Europe? You see a lot of altostratus in Europe. Low cloud, stratocumulus, subtropical, stratus. This mountain slope is covered with thick layer of stratus cloud as cold air moves across the region. Shallow cumulus, flat top clouds form a common sight on a fine day. Winds. Air begins to move when the sun heats the land and warms the atmosphere. Molecules in the air move faster when they are heated and the air starts to expand like a huge invisible bubble. Warm air rises through the surrounding cooler air. At the same time, cooler, heavier air is drawn to replace the rising air. This circulation of air is called convection. Wind speed depends on air pressure, or difference in air pressure, I'd say. Wind blows from areas of high pressure to areas of low pressure. Meteorologists use the Beaufort scale to measure the force of the wind ranging from 0 to 12. So 12 is 120 kilometers an hour, 11, well, let's look at the scale. So they're separate in 5 meters. But between 3 and 4, it steps up to 10 metres, 10 kilometres an hour. See, oh, really irritated is use a small km. There's no excuse for using non-SI units. I don't want non-SI things. Yeah, so in the middle range, it's over 10 kilometres an hour, big step up. Basically, sort of get up to... So a storm is better, is less than a, this goes gale, storm, hurricane. Land and sea breezes. Coastal winds blow from the sea during the afternoon. These create cooling sea breezes, which are strongest in the late afternoon. At night, winds blow the opposite direction, and the wind from the land out to the sea. On warm sunny days, sea breezes blow on the coast. These onshore breezes are caused by differences in temperature between the hot land and the cooler water. Cool winds enter mountain valleys both during the day and night, but in different ways. In the daytime, winds descend into the center of the mountain valley. At night, it follows down the side of the mountains. I can tell, bloody well tell you, that definitely happens if you go walking late at night out here. It's the desperate winds that flow, desperately cold. Rain, hail, and snow. Water or ice that falls from the clouds is called precipitation. It may be the form of rain, drizzle, sleet, snow, or hail. The conditions with the cloud and the temperature outside control the kind of precipitation that falls. Water droplets in a cloud can turn to ice if the cloud is at the height of called the freezing level. This can be low as 300 meters or as high as 5 kilometers above the ground. Snow falls from very cold, low clouds when the air temperature around is freezing. This allows ice crystals to reach the ground without melting. It's interesting that they put this myth out here by showing snow crystals. Rain forms when the water droplets collect around ice crystals until they are heavy enough to form. Hail and strong air currents circulate and cause the layers of ice to build up around the ice crystals. They come light as hail. Snow forms when the low-level clouds are where ice crystals do not melt before they hit the ground. Rain, hail, snow. Floods. Cause and effects. Rivers can flood when so much rain falls over a prolonged period that they overflow their banks. A sphere flood occurred in October 2000 when torrential rains caused huge streams of water to engulf houses in northeastern Italy. Roadways turned into fast-flowing rivers, dams designed to trap floodwaters collapsed, and water levels reached the highest point in more than 30 years, preventing floods. For thousands of years, humans have tried to reduce the risk of flooding by building structures to block and channel rising waters. Levee banks, tidal barriers, and dams are shown here. The Yangtze flood, showing it flooding, showing the same river flooding. Storms. Storms are created when warm rising air currents and water vapor combine with colder air at the middle upper levels of the atmosphere. The rising moisture area cools, the water vapor turns to cloud. The clouds will continue to grow into cumulonimbus, then the thundercloud is strong warm updrafts to meet the cold air in the middle and upper levels. The colder air in the upper part of the thundercloud starts to sink, creating a downward current called the downdraft. The combination of updrafts and downdrafts causes water droplets and ice to grow and form a rain hail. It also creates electric charges called lightning. The important thing is that as water goes up, it condenses and the pressure drops. Changing weather. The diagram shows low pressure systems over northern Europe. Precise location is shown in the map above right. The cold front is creating stormy conditions over western Europe. Farther east, a warm front is bringing light rain to much of Poland. As the fronts move eastward, they can either strengthen or weaken. So you've got these two things, cold front, city and town. There's usually three main stages of progress in a thunderstorm. They involve formation of cumulus clouds, then opposing up drafts and downdrafts and air currents. The entire cycle may last only 50 minutes or they can last several hours. So building up there, such risk, and this is a beautiful thing around here. From up here you can see these, the coastal storms start to go up and sort of goes up for a while, then it really gets going. It's interesting that these storms can often go the opposite direction of a wind as they actually walk into wind. As peak, cumulus nimbus clouds form an anvil on a flat top, and the air begins to sink, creating downdrafts. On the wane, the downdrafts outnumber the updrafts. The storm supply of warm, rising moist air finally cuts off. It's interesting that you may have hot, dry conditions, but the rain hits the ground, turns to hot, moist air, and starts over pretty much. And this is showing a front, various fronts going in. It's hard to see what goes. Behind the cold front, the air is clear and the temperature falls. Warm air rises rapidly along the cold front. Warm air rises gradually along the warm front. So there's two things. There's a cold front coming in and a warm front. It's So the cold front creates storms coming in. The hot front coming in slides over the top. Creates a different type of clouds, rain on both. Tornadoes. A tornado, also called a twister or a whirlwind, is one of the most powerful forces on Earth. Hot, humid conditions are ideal for a tornado, which starts with an enormous thundercloud. From its dense black base, a spinning funnel like a snake is down to the ground. When it touches, it gathers up huge billowing cloud of dust and debris. It can measure up to 1.6 kilometers across and move it at 105 kilometers an hour and generate winds of up to 480 kilometers an hour. So it's interesting. I think it's a cold front sitting over top of a hot front. So it allows the hot air to go in and condense. I've got to really think how it works. Formation of tornado. Tornadoes typically look like an elephant's trunk or funnel hanging down from the base of a storm cloud. Very low air pressure inside the funnel causes moisture in the atmosphere to condense, making it visible. The bulge at the base of the thunderstorm is known as the wall cloud. Severe weather conditions may produce a line of storms to result of a series of tornadoes. I have to really think about the water carrying capacity. Hurricanes. Hurricane is a huge spinning storm system. This is, you should say it's hundreds of kilometers across, all it says. If the cluster drifts beyond 5 degrees north or south of the equator, it starts rotating. Well, you should also say you need a certain water temperature underneath it. I think it must be 22 degrees C. The faster away from the equator it moves, the hurricane spins faster and becomes more powerful. Hurricanes can measure up to 800 kilometers across and can produce torrential range up to 300 kilometers an hour. An enormous high tide called a storm surge. The current cluster hurricane is the center of the eye. So it's basically generated by the water vapor, trapped, the energy trapped in water, so if it travels over hot water. Lightning. Lightning is probably the most dramatic feature of thunderstorms. We still don't know exactly what causes lightning, but we do know that it involves an increase of positive and negative charges inside the thundercloud, and it's likely that the updraft of the storm carries positive charges to the top of the cloud, and the updraft pulls negative charges to the bottom. These opposite charges are attracted to each other. The attraction grows stronger until eventually the electricity leaps or discharges from one area to the other. Positive charges that build up and the tropical cloud is close to the negative charge in the atmosphere next to the cloud. That lightning eventually jumps between them. Most lightning bolts charge about 100 million volts for electricity. That doesn't mean anything. What does 100 million volts for electricity doesn't mean? I can have 100 million volts in one charge. I think in amps, that would be the best thing. A strike in a city such as the one in Istanbul, Turkey, caused sudden power surges that may disrupt the power supplies. Colors in the sky. Was it sun dogs and that type of stuff? I really, really have to think. When sunlight passes through glass or water, it bends slightly or refracts and breaks up into separate colours and makes up white. So it's differential refraction. A rainbow forms when sunlight is refracted as it enters the raindrop and is reflected from the rear of the drop and refracted a second time as it leaves. Why the sky is blue. Sunlight is a mixture of colours in the spectrum: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. Particles in the atmosphere scatter the colours one by one, beginning with violet. The sun... What? Okay, violet. When the sun is high in the sky, only violet, indigo, blue, and a little green scattered. So the sky is blue. because it scatters, it's coming down, it scatters out and back in. If I see a piece of blue sky, that's the sun. Light is coming in and scattered towards me. Global freezing, global warming, next is global warming, and that's it. Global freezing, yes, climate changed many times in the last few million years. During periods of severe cold and as ice ages or glacials ice crept across the land, it gorged out hollows and pushed soils and rocks ahead of it. Sea levels dropped greatly and much of the water froze. During the warmer periods between the ice ages, called the interglacials, ice melted and huge hollows filled with water become lakes. Evidence of the past climates is largely from animals and plant fossils found in sediments and oceans. Little ice age between 1450 and 1850, Northern Europe experienced a little ice age. The River Thames of London, England, froze over in winter. From 1607 to 1814, a people held events called frost fairs on the ice, with food stalls, games and dancing. So this is Thames, used to be freeze over. Okay, so we're looking at the different things. So it starts of a long ice age. So apparently 330 million years ago, the peak of the Jurassic starting up is the start of an ice age. Well, there you go. Go check that one. We've had the little ice age. So, yeah, we are coming out of a big little ice age. It's pretty amazing that you'd have this for global warming. This is interesting here. Oh, yeah, this is showing the old picture of England. Global warming. The Earth's climate may be changing as a result of human activity. Earth has steadily been getting warmer since the end of the Little Ice Age in the 1800s. Last century, global temperatures rose by 1 degree Celsius. This increase is called global warming. This may be caused by greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases such as water vapor, carbon dioxide, occur naturally in the atmosphere and has kept our planet warm by trapping solar heat. However, when fuels such as coal and oil are burned to create electricity, they power cars, excess carbon dioxide forms. The more carbon dioxide means heat is trapped in the atmosphere, the Earth heats up. Greenhouse gases absorb heat from the sun and warm the planet. However, some greenhouse gases, such as carbon dioxide and methane, are built up in the atmosphere. As a result, the natural greenhouse gas has become warmer. So the entire thing is that methane is much, much better, but if I have a bottle of carbon and I have a bottle of methane, and I look at the heating effect of that carbon over 50 years, it's much bigger than the methane, because the methane beats it for year one, year two, and then it starts to disappear, starts to get cooked out. Carbon dioxide emission. The United States has less than 5% of the world's population. It's responsible for more than a quarter of the human greenhouse gas emissions. The graph shows the total carbon dioxide emissions divided by the population and the number of countries. Each American emits more than 22 tons of carbon. Each Australian... Australians are the next worst offenders. G'day, 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 mate. And of course, we're the worst offenders, but we are the nastiest people, I'd say. Okay, effects of global warming. I'm going across. The Earth has heated and cooled naturally in ice cycles for a million years. What's different about the heating cycle we're currently experiencing is that many experts now agree that humans are the cause. Most societies in the world are depending on burning coal for electricity. The increased amounts of greenhouse gases that result are causing the atmosphere to overheat. If this trend continues, the effects could be devastating. As ice sheets and glaciers melt, sea levels will rise, flood islands and coastal regions. Rainfall patterns may change, causing drought in Africa and India. To slow down this climate change, most industrial clients have signed up to the Kyoto Protocol in 1997 and agreed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And then this final thing is they're showing retreating glaciers everywhere. here is El Niño, El Niña. The unusually warm ocean current of El Niño, which flows across the Pacific towards South America, can change the weather in the region. Heavy rain falls in some parts, while other areas suffer drought. Warmer, wetter, drier. So, can cause heats and heats of problems in Japan, America, everywhere. Wetter and cooler in America, or wetter and warmer in everywhere else, sort of in Peru, and wetter and cooler and warmer in around Melbourne, and warmer around Rio de Janeiro, and drier in the tropics where we are. Thanks a lot for listening. That's the end of reading this entire story. There is the Earth's resources, but there's another chapter. The Earth's riches, coal and gas, coal, wind and solar energy, power from dams, and comparing the Earth Australia is bigger than the United States, right? However, you win because you've got bloody Alaska up there. Whereas Brazil is bigger than Australia. Argentina is a pretty big country. Kyrgyzstan is pretty amazing. If you imagine when that was added to Russia. Don't know exactly where that sits. You can sort of see it cut out from here. And Sudan, which unfortunately has been cut out. And the Murray Darling. Caspian Sea is running out. This, I think, general looks at it. And they're looking at the highest mountains and stuff like that. I don't think where Africa. Oceania, Matt Kosciuszko Cook. Oh, there's a pretty mountain in Indonesia. I didn't know that we had one. Well, thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.